Hello, I'm Rachel. I'm the Learning Manager at Beacon. And this week's edition of the Talking News is for Wednesday, the 28th of October, 2020.
Hello, I'm Simon, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading this week, we have Ian, Christine, Mina, Helen, Flashback Roger, Pete, Angela, a new voice David, and of course me, Simon. This week, we have another brand new way of listening to the Talking News on your telephone. More about that a little bit later on. And included this week, as usual, there is an update from Beacon, some local news, in Sightloss News, the new way of listening to the Black Country Talking News, our flashback quiz with Mina, news from the Wolves and West Bromwich Albion on This Week in History with Flashback Roger. We have a look back at the career of Cliff Richard, who's just turned 80, the weather for the weekend and next week, and our little music quiz at the end. Now, where did we finish last week? The music quiz. It's over to you, Pete.
So let's start off where we finished last week. And we set you a little music quiz where we're asking you to guess the title to the song. So let's run through them, see how you got on. The first one was from 1961. It was Helen Shapiro and Walking Back to Happiness. That was the word we were after. So Walking Back to Happiness from 1961. From 1962, we had Joe Brown and A Picture of You. That was the word we were looking for. So from 1962, Picture of You from Joe Brown. And finally, from 1963, Frank Ifield and Wayward Wind. That was the word we were after. Frank Ifield, Wayward Wind from 1963. Another music quiz coming up at the end.
And of course, it's thank you to Andy Coulson for sending in the questions. So let's start off with some Black Country news with Angela and Ian. But first up, it's Christine.
Councils across the region are set to receive millions of pounds in a major cash boost as part of a £1 billion package of additional support announced by the Prime Minister earlier this month. The local government secretary has confirmed the allocations for councils, which includes individual authorities across the Black Country, Staffordshire, Worcestershire and Shropshire. More than £900 million of the funding will be provided to councils for their ongoing work to support communities during the coronavirus pandemic. It brings the total funding given to councils since the start of COVID-19 crisis to help with spending pressures to £5.7 billion, including a £1.1 billion infection control fund. In the Black Country, Sandwell Council will receive £7,920,795, Walsall £6,643,519, Wolverhampton £6,118,180, and Dudley £3,943,754. While in Staffordshire, £4,652,260 is set to go to Staffordshire County Council, £356,491 to Cannock Chase, £100,000 to Lichfield, £112,356 to South Staffordshire, and £177,870 to Stafford. To address the ongoing challenges local authority leisure centres are facing, the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport has also confirmed today that £100 million will be used to introduce a new fund which will support council leisure centres most in need. Further details on the scheme will be set out shortly. These funds are part of an unprecedented package of support for councils, which also includes up to £465 million through the new local alert level system, £300 million to support test and trace, and £30 million for enforcement and compliance of the lockdown regulations. Councils can also claim funding through a compensation scheme for lost income from sales, fees and charges. All councils will receive a minimum of £100,000.
More than 500 people have been fined for breaching lockdown restrictions as police clamp down on COVID rule breakers. Police have been stepping up fines for breaking restrictions. New figures show that West Midlands Police have issued 4,001 directions to leave since the start of lockdown in March, along with 527 fines to those who refused to comply. A total of 20 arrests have been made. In recent weeks, the force has taken a tougher stance on those who flout coronavirus rules, with Chief Constable Dave Thompson warning his officers were adopting a zero-tolerance approach to larger-scale breaches. The majority of the fines are believed to be for higher-level breaches. They include the organiser of an illegal rave at Phoenix Business Park in Walsall last month, who was fined £10,000. West Midlands Police also revealed it had received more than 7,000 online reports of restrictions being breached since early April.
Work has begun to erect the steel framework for Phase 2 of City of Wolverhampton's new railway station building. Contractors Galliford Try have completed the piling and foundation works in just over a month. Once the steel framework is installed, work will begin on lifting in floor slabs, laying the blockwork for the external walls, cladding the building and putting the roof on to make it watertight. It's another major step forward in the development, which is part of the city's £150 million interchange scheme, delivering improvements to bus, tram and train connectivity. Once the railway station is completed in early 2021, final works will begin to connect the station to a new metro extension, creating a fully integrated transport hub with the neighbouring bus station. Phase 1 of the new railway station opened to the public at the end of May and was handed over to West Midlands Railway. It includes 6 ticket vending machines, new British Transport Police, toilet accessibility and baby changing facilities, 3 retail units ready to be fitted out and train crew accommodation. Completion of Phase 2 will deliver 3 more retail units as well as a customer waiting room, a help point. The development works have been cleverly designed in 2 phases to ensure they do not impact on train services from Wolverhampton.
Dudley Council's Cabinet is set to review plans to help keep pedestrians and road users safe as the Dudley Metro works continues to progress at pace. A new vehicle barrier and pedestrian fence at Tipton Road near Castle Gate will provide protection for all road users taking the bridge above the metro line. When completed, the new line will connect Brierley Hill and Dudley Town to the rail network, running past the Very Light Rail Innovation Centre. During the meeting, Cabinet will also look at a number of other works to improve and restore existing bridges across the borough.
Jaguar Land Rover is set to axe some jobs at its giant engine manufacturing centre at Wolverhampton due to the ongoing impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the business. They will go as part of a voluntary redundancy programme affecting its operation in the West Midlands only. JLR is not confirming exact numbers it is seeking, but says it will be on a small scale and will impact on its hourly paid workforce, including manufacturing associates and fitters working on production lines. Other roles affected include inspectors in engineering and testers. The wider UK car industry has been badly hit by the pandemic, with car plants shut down for many weeks during the height of the lockdown. Sales have begun to recover and JLR were up by 50% for the 3 months to the end of September at 113,569 vehicles compared to 74,067 between April and June. But they were 11.9% down on levels a year ago.
There's three more local news bulletins coming up shortly, but now time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here. Well, another week has gone by and I'm back with the latest updates from the Beacon Centre. First up this week, we're starting with Halloween. If you know some little ones after some spooky fun, then why not get them Beacon's Halloween Family Fun Pack? It's packed full of activities to keep everyone entertained, including some spooky craft activities, a haunted word search, and the chance to design your own pumpkin picture. It's just £3 and available via download from our website. A donation of £3 will make a real difference to Beacon, as we've lost almost £700,000 in income since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. £3 could help fund 15 minutes of low vision advice. To get your pack, head to our website www.beaconvision.org/beacon-halloween-pack. That's www.beaconvision.org/beacon-halloween-pack. If you're celebrating Halloween, we hope you enjoy it, but remember to stay safe. Things are a little different this year. While we're on the subject of fundraising, we'd like to say a heartfelt thank you to everyone who's donated to our Beacon of Hope campaign so far. We could tell you again about the difference we think it will make, but we thought you'd like to hear from our members about what Beacon means to them. Among those the charity helps is Carl Galloway, a Beacon Centre member with sight loss, who regularly attended our Sedgley Day Centre prior to the pandemic. He said, "Before lockdown, I was making really good progress with my independence and mobility, feeling more confident every day with Beacon support. But being without Beacon over the past few months has been really hard. I've felt isolated and lonely from not being able to spend time with my friends and enjoy the sense of community that Beacon brings. I need Beacon support and the daily structure it brings to my life more than ever, especially as I try to regain the skills I've lost during lockdown. We're just starting to pilot face-to-face services again, thanks in part to support from everyone. So a donation to Beacon really does make a difference. If you'd like to support us, you can visit our website, www.beaconvision.org/beacon-of-hope. Alternatively, to donate £5, you just need to text Beacon Hope, that's all one word, to 70085. Text messages cost £5 plus one standard rate message, and you'll be opting in to hear more about our work and fundraising via telephone and SMS. If you'd like to give £5 but do not wish to receive marketing communications, text Beacon Hope No Info to 70085. Now, do you or anyone you know need a house clearance? Beacon can help. We provide a free service for selected item removals, but can also provide a full clearance of a property with a price subject to quotation. It's a great way to support Beacon. If you'd like to find out more, give us a call on 01902 880 111. Did you remember to put your clocks back this weekend? I hope so, or you'll be really wondering what's going on by now. If you've found you're struggling to make out the time on your clocks or your watch or even your phone, get in touch with us. Our sight loss advisors could talk you through some of the things that could really help, such as a talking clock. Give us a call on 01902 880 111. That's 01902 880 111. That's it for this week. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Helen. More local news now with Ian, Christine, David and Angela.
Councillors will be asked to back a spend of nearly £700,000 on improving green spaces around the borough's canal and river network. The investment, the lion's share of which will come from external funding at no expense to the taxpayer, is part of the Black Country Blue Network. The project is a region-wide scheme to improve biodiversity of green spaces through habitat improvement works. It will also see canal and riverside locations rejuvenated to make them more attractive to visitors. The Dudley sites earmarked for improvement include open spaces in Coseley, including Cannon Drive and Clayton Park, Sedgley Beacon, Castle Hill Woodland and Peggy's Meadow, open space in Holloway Street, Upper Gornal, and Turles Hill and Swanbrook Valley. Members of Dudley Council's ruling cabinet will be asked to back the plan at a meeting later this month. The £675,000 for the scheme will be funded by £339,000 from a European Regional Development Fund grant, £272,000 from developers through either Section 106 or Community Infrastructure Levy contributions, £24,000 from the Wildlife Trust, and £40,000 from prudential borrowing.
A police operation aimed to ensure commuters at a city bus station were following the rules on wearing face masks. A joint operation by West Midlands Police and partner groups saw a day of action to check people at Wolverhampton bus station were following the government guidelines on wearing masks. One person was fined £200 for failing to comply to rules, while another 90 were instructed to wear their face mask correctly. The force said it would continue to work with its partners at the local authority, transport operators and alongside officers from Safer Travel to monitor the city's public transport in the weeks ahead. Superintendent Simon Inglis said, "We're pleased the vast majority of people are wearing face masks, but unfortunately some are still not following the rules. We found some who have one but are not properly covering their nose or mouth, and we've instructed them on how to wear it correctly. We need people to keep following the government regulations, but if they do flout the rules, we will continue to issue fines to ensure compliance and protect the city."
A new coronavirus test site, which can be accessed on foot, is opening in Dudley Borough. The walkthrough site has been chosen to make it easier for people without a car to attend and is easily accessible for those on foot or bike. The site, located on Flood Street Car Park off Oakey Wells Street in Dudley, has now opened. The site is not providing a drop-in service and all tests must be booked in advance. People being tested must follow public health measures, including social distancing, not travelling by taxi or public transport, practicing good personal hygiene, and wearing a face covering throughout, including while travelling to and from the testing centre. All those attending an appointment at a walkthrough test site will be provided with guidance on getting to and from the test site safely, with additional support for vulnerable groups and people with disabilities. The site, which complements the regional testing network, will be open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Appointments must be made in advance by calling 119 or visiting www.nhs.uk/coronavirus. The mobile testing unit, which had been at Engine Lane by the waterfront, has now relocated to Grey 7 car park, also at the waterfront, where it will be until the end of the month. All people attending the centres must wear a face covering, with the exception of children under 3 years old, who must observe social distancing on site. Children over 3 will only be admitted if they are wearing a face covering. If they cannot wear a face mask for medical reasons, then they should request a home test. The testing centre is being operated in partnership with Serco and will offer self-administered tests.
The Grand Theatre and Black Country Living Museum have been handed lifeline grants worth £3.75 million. The Historic Theatre in Wolverhampton has been awarded £1.19 million in the latest round of the government's £1.57 billion Cultural Recovery Fund, while the Black Country Living Museum gets £2.56 million. The announcement sees 8 of the region's most famous arts organisations sharing funding totalling £17 million. Birmingham Hippodrome will get £3 million. Birmingham Town Hall and Symphony Hall will receive £2.53 million. Ironbridge Gorge will get £1.86 million. And Birmingham Rep will be given £1.38 million. Arts Council England says the funding will allow venues to survive the pandemic and help protect jobs which have been placed under threat due to the lockdown. The Grand, which celebrated its 125th anniversary last year, has been closed since March the 17th. The Black Country Living Museum was forced to close for 5 months due to the coronavirus crisis before reopening in August with a cap on visitor numbers. This resulted in attendances being less than half their usual level, which bosses say has had a serious impact on its financial stability.
Gangs of kids hopping on and off buses and causing bedlam across Dudley could have strict restrictions placed on their travel passes. Police have confirmed they're looking at making it harder for the mischief makers to use the public transport network, with a chance they will only be able to take the trip to school and back. Councillor Jackie Cowell said she was concerned about the groups of youths making trouble in her ward, often after dark. She cited issues with the sometimes hooded individuals breaking bottles, smashing things up and causing general nuisance. They seem to be hanging around in groups and just causing bedlam, she said. Raising the issue at a scrutiny board last week, she asked the borough's most senior police officer what was being done to tackle the problem. Chief Superintendent Kim Medill, who was recently appointed to the top job, said that dispersal orders were being used and the possible restrictions on bus travel were also being considered. We are trying to deal with colleges and schools and those open spaces, she said. We have had a number of youths over the last few weeks that seem to be travelling the bus network across the borough after school and early evenings, doing exactly what you have described. We are looking at the opportunity to make the bus passes that the children are using only viable to get to and from school so they can't continue to travel across the borough and cause those issues. She said that a couple of sergeants and an inspector were in discussions about the options. She encouraged residents to make officers aware of any issues so they can target patrols in areas where problems were being reported.
More local news coming up, but now it's that time of the week again with this week's flashback quiz. It's Mina.
Thank you, Simon, and welcome to this week's flashback quiz as we test you again with questions on what happened on this week in history, with the answers coming up in our flashback section later. So, are you ready? Question one. How long did the gunfight at the OK Corral actually last? Question 2. In what year did Walt Disney first promote Disneyland on TV? Question 3. We all know about fingerprinting, but two identical twins have the same fingerprints. Question 4. What was unusual about a German gymnast, George Iser? Question 5. In what year was Orson Welles' infamous radio broadcast, War of the Worlds, made? Question 6. In 1974, Muhammad Ali knocked out George Foreman in a boxing match in Zaire. The fight has become known as what? Flashback Roger is eagerly waiting with the answers in our flashback section coming up, and I'll run through them all at the end of this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Good luck!
Now don't forget, the answers are coming up shortly. But now, some more local news with Ian.
More than 8,500 people in the Black Country and Staffordshire have signed a petition calling for the government to let football fans back into stadiums. Across the UK, almost 200,000 fans have backed the idea, forcing a parliamentary debate to take place on the issue in the coming weeks. As of 10 a.m. on October the 16th, 2,146 people had signed it in Dudley, 1,533 in Wolverhampton, 1,321 in Sandwell, and 1,367 in Walsall. While in Staffordshire, in South Staffordshire, 1,047 had signed it, 730 in Stafford, and 548 in Cannock Chase. They are all among almost 25,000 from across the West Midlands to sign the petition. The petition on Parliament's website has gathered 197,000 signatures, meaning MPs in Westminster will have to debate the matter, now confirmed for November the 9th. The Premier League says English football loses £100 million every month without spectators, while the English Football League said it lost £50 million in revenue in 2019-2020 and stands to lose a further £200 million if fans do not return in 2020-2021.
Pubs and social clubs across Dudley have been urged to avoid holding organised firework displays for Bonfire Night. Council chiefs have made the plea and are calling for residents to avoid holding their own to prevent the spread of the virus. Dudley Council has already cancelled this year's Himley Bonfire in a bid to keep people safe. Instead, the authority is putting on a free firework extravaganza, which will be set off from various points across the borough. Councillor Patrick Hawley, leader of the council, said, "We are aiming for full borough coverage, so hopefully people will be able to step outside their homes wherever they live and see a free firework display safely. With cases of coronavirus on the rise, it's critical we do all we can to stop the spread of the virus in the borough."
A drive to convert all lights on main roads in Dudley to light-emitting diode, LED, will be completed by the end of the year. Dudley Council's Cabinet is being told the scheme to replace all lights on main roads and make them more energy efficient is now 98% complete. Around 6,600 streetlights on main roads across the borough have now been converted, with a small remaining few expected to be converted within the next 6 weeks. LED lighting costs less to run, is considered more effective, and is also flexible as it can be dimmed at certain times of the night. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "The ongoing programme to replace our streetlights with improved, less expensive, more energy efficient LED bulbs is part of the Council's Invest to Save project. The outlay will be more than covered by the savings we make on electricity, and because we will be using less, it will ease pressure on the network. It's great to see the scheme is nearly complete, and I look forward to seeing it fully rolled out." Nationally, the demand for electricity is highest between the months of November and February, between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. At this time, the margin between the electricity generated and that required by households and business is at its tightest. Once complete, the project will reduce peak demand by 100 kilowatts. The update will be discussed at the next virtual meeting of Dudley Council's Cabinet on Thursday, October the 29th at 6 p.m.
Animal charity RSPCA has dealt with more than 500 incidents in the last year involving starter pets in the West Midlands and Staffordshire. The animal charity has warned that a rise in interest of starter pets during lockdown could lead to an increase in neglect due to their complex needs. Starter pets include rabbits, guinea pigs and hamsters. The RSPCA has revealed it dealt with 365 incidents involving small furry pets in the West Midlands last year. Nationally, figures for people searching on Google for small pets to buy during lockdown soared compared to the year before, with searches for rabbits for sale more than tripling from 18,000 in July 2019 to 65,000 in July 2020. Searches for hamsters for sale tripled from 10,000 in July 2019 to 30,000 in July this year. And guinea pigs for sale doubled from 19,000 to 40,000 in the same period. The RSPCA rescue teams also took nearly 240 rabbits into its care during lockdown between March 23rd and August 31st due to cruelty, neglect and abandonment. The charity is releasing the statistics as it shines a light on small furry animals during the final week of Adoptober, a rehoming drive encouraging animal lovers to adopt, don't shop. Dr. Jane Tyson from the RSPCA's Companion Animals Department said, "Small furries can be fantastic pets to have. However, they have a reputation as a good starter pet for children, as there is a misconception that they are easy to look after, but they actually have quite complex needs. For example, rabbits need to live in pairs as they are sociable animals and need a much bigger space to explore and exercise in than just a hutch. During lockdown, there seems to have been an increase in interest for starter pets, which may be because parents were at home with their children and so thought it was a good time to bring a new pet into the family. While we believe many people buy a rabbit, guinea pig, hamster or other small furry with good intentions, and many will also do their research, there is a risk that not enough research is being done, and we are concerned that this could lead to an increase in neglect of small furries in the months to come. Adopting small furries from the RSPCA, either from our national centres or any of our branches around the country, will mean you will have all the information and advice you need to ensure your new pets are happy and healthy.
Dunley Council spent more than £100,000 cleaning up graffiti last year. The figure put Dudley among the highest spenders in the country when it came to removing messages daubed on buildings, despite actual graffiti incidents being much lower than other areas. Officials in the borough dealt with a total of 346 incidents in 2019, nearly one a day on average. The total of £103,913 put Dudley Council 15th out of authorities that released data in terms of cash spent on removing graffiti. Other councils in the Black Country, Staffordshire and Shropshire, either did not provide the information or said it didn't hold any. Lichfield said it did not have a single case. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm at Dudley Council, said, "Without seeing the figures in detail, we can't be sure we're comparing like for like with other authorities. But what I can say is we run a dedicated and efficient team here in Dudley, and our costs cover all aspects of the team, including the vehicle, equipment and materials. The team is responsible for not only removal of graffiti and fly posting, but also the jet washing of services across the borough. It goes without saying that graffiti is an act of vandalism that leaves hard-working taxpayers out of pocket. We have to spend money cleaning up other people's mess, and that is extremely frustrating."
A final news roundup on the way, plus news from our local football clubs too. Now, did you know that from this week, there's a new way to listen to the Black Country Talking News? And to tell us more with this week's Sightless News, it's Pete.
01902 213 210. That's a new number for you. And that number is the number you can dial in to listen to the Black Country Talking News on your telephone. It's a new way of listening to it. Just started this week, and the number is 01902 213 210. And when you phone in, it'll explain how it all works, but it's very simple. The button number 4 and button number 6 on your telephone keypad or on your dial will... 4 will rewind and 6 will go forward. And button number 5 will pause or play back. But when you phone in, it'll tell you what to do. So it's all very simple. And the number that you need if you want to listen to the Black Country Talking News on your telephone, or you know someone who'd like to listen to the Black Country Talking News, they can if they phone 01902 213 210. Calls are charged at a standard rate call, and some of you may have free calls as part of your phone packages. For more information on costs, please contact your own phone provider. So there's lots of ways now of listening to the Black Country Talking News. The new service on the telephone, it's online through Beacon's website. So if you visit Beacon's website, you can have a listen there. If you've got a mobile and you want to listen to it via the British Wireless for the Blind mobile app, you can do that. You just search for it in the App Store and download it. And that's it. And you can listen to it via the British Wireless for the Blind mobile app. And there are other talking newspapers you could listen to too on that service as well. Last week we told you about it was now on Alexa. So if you have an Alexa, you can just say, "Alexa, play the Black Country Talking News," and it'll do it. And of course, for those of you who aren't able to receive the Black Country Talking News in either of those formats or any of those formats, we'll of course send it to you out on CD if you live in the Wolverhampton and Dudley boroughs.
So, to let you know, this week, I think we've got everything covered, haven't we? We've got it online, we've got it on a mobile app, we've got it on Alexa, we've got it on CD, the Black Country Talking News, and now you can listen to it on your telephone by dialing in, and that number again, 01902 213 210.
Yes, that's right. You can now listen to the Black Country Talking News on your phone. Our final news roundup now with Ian, Angela, but first up, it's Christine.
Some of the country's best-known puppets will be on display at a city's park museum. The Hogarth Puppets exhibition will take place at Bantock House Museum, giving people across the city the chance to see a host of famous puppets such as Muffin the Mule. The Hogarth Puppets became Britain's best-known puppet company at home and abroad after being founded in 1932 by Jan Bussell and Anne Hogarth. The pair started their careers with the earliest puppetry on television, with shows airing live on Saturday evenings during the 1930s from a caravan theatre outside the BBC headquarters. During the Second World War, London County Council commissioned them to entertain children in parks. The Hogarth Puppets toured internationally with their string puppets, regularly visiting Australia, Asia, the United States and Europe, and the exhibition looks at a range of their puppets, including their most famous creation. Wolverhampton Council Cabinet Member for City Economy, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, said the Council was happy to be able to bring such an exhibition to Bantock House. The exhibition will run from the 24th of October 2020 to the 31st of January 2021.
Wolverhampton Literature Festival will return for its fifth year in February 2021. Hosted by Wolverhampton Council, the festival aims to amplify the voices of authors, poets, writers, storytellers, puppeteers, podcasters, vloggers and publishers across the UK and in the Black Country, organisers said. The three-day festival will be taking place between Friday, February the 12th, 2021 and Sunday, February the 14th, with the lineup to be confirmed later this year. This year saw the likes of TV presenter Sandy Toksvig, former Wolf star Carl Ikemi, music mogul Alan McGee and local poet Emma Pursehouse on the bill. People are also being encouraged to get involved with pre-festival engagement activities, which will be shared across social media on Facebook and Twitter in the lead-up to the festival. The 2021 festival focuses on three major themes: music, current affairs, and community voices. Wolverhampton Council Cabinet Member for City Economy, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, said, "It is fantastic that the festival is returning for its fifth year, and that we can showcase extraordinary talent from across the region. There will be a mixture of events, and I encourage everyone of all ages and backgrounds to get involved. In accordance with government regulations, the festival will be delivered through a mixture of virtual and physical events that will be confirmed in due course. Those interested in volunteering or keeping up to date on the festival's activities can visit wolvesliteraturefestival.co.uk.
Saltwells in Dudley has been officially recognised as a National Nature Reserve by Natural England. The already highly acclaimed Saltwells Local Nature Reserve has been officially elevated to national status after Natural England recognised its unique geology under its new National Nature Reserve strategy. The borough is already home to the country's first ever geological National Nature Reserve, Wren's Nest, which was declared in 1956. With Saltwells now recognised as a national gem and the first geological site to be selected under Natural England's new strategy, it makes Dudley a rarity as an urban area with two national nature reserves. The reserve's important geological features date back over 420 million years. They give visitors a glimpse into the world during the Silurian period, when Dudley lay under a warm tropical sea, right through to the Carboniferous period, when the coal seams which fuelled the Industrial Revolution in Dudley were forming in vast swamps. In places, visitors can also see hard igneous rock, which formed when hot molten magma forced its way through these older layers. More recently, the rocks here have been exploited for industrial purposes with coal, clay, fire clay and ironstone being quarried and used by the industries that helped define the Black Country. Salty waters were also found here, and during the 1880s, attempts were made to use the area as a health spa until later mining activity polluted the water and prevented further use. Today, the clay pits, collapsed mines, pools, cuttings, rail and canal sites reveal not only the site's geology, but also its industrial and mining heritage. England has 223 national nature reserves. The recognition of salt wells puts it alongside such famous landscapes as the Lizard in Cornwall and Lindisfarne in Northumberland.
Staff at a railway station, which shot to fame thanks to their resident cat, have thanked all those who voted for them. Stourbridge Junction was a front runner in the World Cup of Stations contest thanks to 6-year-old George the Cat, who has become a celebrity. But they narrowly missed out on the top prize to Glasgow Queen Street Station by less than a third of a percent. Station supervisor Ian Tomlinson, who is in charge of the Moggy, said, "We lost by a cat's whisker, you can say, but we're still the top in England." Obviously, a lot of work went into it by our station manager, Simone Carter, to promote it. Our passengers have all voted, and lots of people have as well, which we're grateful for. But we're a bit disappointed, of course. We're only a little station, and George has been very popular. He's a great ambassador for the station. George, who has nearly 10,000 followers on social media, has become a celebrity after making his home at the station in December 2017. And he hasn't seemed to have taken missing out on top spot too badly, with Mr. Tomlinson saying he simply spent the day in the booking office. It was George's work promoting public safety through his online presence which helped Stourbridge Junction make the shortlist for the Rail Delivery Group's annual competition. Staff at Stourbridge Junction were praised for installing new signs and educating passengers to ensure they could travel safely and comfortably amid the pandemic. But special recognition went to George the Cat for his role in helping to spread the latest railway safety messages through social media.
Bird keepers at Dudley Zoo are celebrating the hatching of a rare Victoria crowned pigeon, just months after the arrival of a male for the attraction's resident female as part of an EAZA-managed studbook breeding programme. The pair have had their first successful hatch, and the chick is already starting to have a nosy out of the nest. Section leader Nicola Wright said, "The chick hatched at the end of September following a 30-day incubation. It's the first chance we've had to work with Victoria crowned pigeon chick, so it's a learning curve for us all, but it looks to be doing really well. And the parents are being very attentive, and we're really pleased the pairing has proved successful so quickly. Both parents will care for their offspring while in the nest, and for the first few months after it fledges. Once it's old enough, keepers will be able to catch up the bird to officially sex it and add an identification ring to its leg. Listed as near threatened on the IUCN Red List, the regal-looking bird, which is the biggest of all pigeon species, is suffering a rapid decline in its native New Guinea due to the destruction of its forest habitat. The blue-grey coloured bird, named after Queen Victoria, is also a prized trophy for poachers. The zoo's Victoria crowned pigeon family can be found in Lorikeet Lookout, where the birds have built their nest on the high apex of the walk-through exhibit's feeding station.
Sports news on the way, so listen out for that. But now, the man with all the answers to the quiz questions. You'll listen carefully, won't you? Because it's Flashback Roger.
Hi everybody, this is Roger, and this is our Flashback section, where we take a look at some events from the week of the 26th of October to the 1st of November of past years, and where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On the 26th of October in 1881, the gunfight at the OK Corral occurred. Marshal Wyatt Earp, his brothers Virgil and Morgan, and Doc Holliday in Tombstone, Arizona, killed three cowboys Wyatt had already branded as outlaws. The gunfight lasted about 30 seconds, and about 30 shots were fired. The Earps and Holliday were charged with murder. However, a Tombstone judge found the men not guilty. On October the 27th in 1954, The Walt Disney's Disneyland TV series debuts on ABC in the States. Walt Disney created the show to help promote and finance the development of his Disneyland amusement park, which opened the following year. The show's stories took place in Adventureland, Tomorrowland, Fantasyland and Frontierland, and they all corresponded to sections of the amusement park. On October the 28th in 1890, Nature magazine published the first article to advocate the use of fingerprinting. Fingerprints were used in ancient China to authenticate government documents. Henry Falls, who was now known as the father of fingerprinting, was the first to suggest using fingerprints for criminal investigations, as fingerprints are unique to every individual. Even identical twins have their own unique fingerprints. October the 29th in 1904, German-American gymnast George Eiser wins 6 Olympic medals in a single day. He lost his leg in a youth after being run over by a train and wore a wooden prosthetic leg during his performance in competitions. He won 3 gold for the parallel bars long horse vault and 25-foot rope climb, 2 silver medals for the pommel horse and 4 event all-rounder, and 1 bronze for the horizontal bar. His achievements were hailed as astonishing at the time. October the 30th, 1938, Orson Welles panicked the nation with his radio adaptation of the War of the Worlds. It was assumed to be an alien invasion from Mars. It was broadcast in the style of an ongoing news event. Many people missed the opening disclaimer and believed it was a live broadcast of an actual alien invasion. October the 30th, 1974, Muhammad Ali wins by a knockout against the overwhelming favourite George Foreman in Zaire for the heavyweight championship of the world. It was dubbed the Rumble in the Jungle. The fight was watched by a record estimated television audience of 1 billion viewers worldwide, becoming the world's most watched TV television broadcast at the time, and the fight grossed an estimated $100 million in revenue. It was during this fight that Ali introduced his rope-a-dope tactic. Ali was stripped of his title in 1967 after he was convicted of draft evasion, citing his religious beliefs and opposition to the Vietnam War. That's the lot for this week, folks. Enjoy the quiz. See you next week. This is Rod saying ta-ra for now. Bye.
Now, don't forget, we'll run through all the answers with Mina at the end of this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, so listen out for that. But before that, what's the weather looking like with Mina?
Again, a bit of everything, with temperatures starting to drop as we get into November next week, ranging from 5 to about 16 degrees. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:04 for sunrise and 16:39 p.m. for the sunset. Now, the clocks have gone back lighter in the morning but getting darker earlier at the night. Friday, 30th of October, we start with light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees with low UV levels. Saturday, 31st of October, we have light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees with low UV levels. As we move into November, Sunday, 1st of November, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees with low UV levels. Moving on to Monday, 2nd of November, we have light rain, showers, a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees with low UV levels. Tuesday, 3rd of November, we have sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees with low UV levels. Wednesday, 4th of November, we have sunny intervals with a gentle breeze and a maximum temperature of 10 degrees with low UV levels. And bonfire night, Thursday, 5th of November, sunny intervals with a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees with low UV levels. So again, a bit of everything this week, but getting cooler. Enjoy the weather.
I will, thanks Mina, but I might need my hat and coat by the sound of things. News from my local football clubs now, and with that, it's Ian.
Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo insists Johnny Castro Otto is working more than anybody else and making good progress after knee surgery. The 26-year-old Spaniard had a successful operation on his right knee in mid-August after injuring his anterior cruciate ligament against Olympiakos in the Europa League. And when asked if Otto is on schedule, Nuno said, "Yes, he's doing okay." Wolves defender Max Kilman has seen his rise into first-team prominence rewarded as he has signed a new five-year contract. The 23-year-old centre-half, who only joined the club in the summer of 2018 from non-league Maidenhead United, is now tied down until 2025. Wolves' run of draws against Newcastle continued as a late Jacob Murphy free kick saw the uninspiring visitors come away from Molineux with a point. Another encounter which was not the most entertaining, Nuno Espirito Santo's side looked to seal victory when Raul Jimenez hammered home for his fourth goal in six games. But Murphy had the final say, catching out Rui Patricio to make it four successive 1-1 draws with the Magpies. Wolves' first stalemate of 2020-2021 leaves them seventh in the Premier League table. There were flashes from Nuno's pack going forward, but just not enough. The search for a complete performance over 90 minutes goes on. Nelson Semedo had a steady showing at right wing back. Pedro Neto impressed again, and Jimenez, predictably, came up with a fine finish that should have won it. The star striker took his goal wonderfully, with a thunderbolt from the edge of the area proving too hot to handle. But clear-cut chances were few and far between. The result put Wolves into 8th place in the Premier League. Wolves are next in action on Friday the 30th of October at home to Crystal Palace with an 8 o'clock kick-off. Ahmed Hegazi has left Albion to join Saudi Arabian side Al Ittihad. The Egyptian centre-back, who was the Baggies' highest earner on £70,000 a week, completed the move shortly before the Saudi Arabian transfer window closed. A deal has already been agreed to make the move permanent at the end of the season. The fee for that move is officially undisclosed. Slaven Bilic admitted he was hugely disappointed to see Ahmed Hegazi leave Albion. A spirited second-half display saw Albion secure a point at Brighton after the two sides played out a 1-1 draw. In a fascinating clash at the Amex Stadium, Carlan Grant netted with around 10 minutes remaining to earn the Baggies a result they more than deserved. In what was a clichéd game of two halves, the hosts were much the brighter of the teams before the interval and took a deserved lead when Jake Livermore scored an unfortunate own goal when Branislav Ivanovic's clearance hit him. Prior to that, Sam Johnston, on his 100th Albion appearance, made a fantastic save to deny Neil Maupay. After the break, though, the Baggies improved drastically with Mateos Pereira going close with two long-distance efforts, one of which clipped the post. But with the clock ticking down, Grant grabbed his first Baggies goal after firing from around 10 yards, after he impressively held off a defender. It meant, on the balance of play, a draw was probably a fair result. Albion, though, had the chances to win it and will be disappointed they couldn't find a second goal that would have secured that elusive first Premier League win of the campaign. All the talk before kick-off centred around Ahmed Hegazi's surprise departure from Albion, with the Egyptian having left for Saudi Arabian side Al Ittihad just 24 hours later. That led to speculation Bilic was angry at the board, with the Croatian reportedly not happy to lose a likely starter at the Amex a day before the game. Hegazi's departure, though, meant the boss had to make one change from the team that impressed in the goalless draw against Burnley. Semi Ayayi was the man who came in at centre-back to replace the Egyptian, with the Nigerian international starting for the first time alongside Ivanovic. Otherwise, Albion remained in a 4-3-3 system, with Grant the central striker and Pereira and Grady Diangana out wide. West Brom's next game is away to Fulham on Monday the 2nd of November with a 5:30 kick-off.
Thanks, Ian. Now, some of you may know that singer Cliff Richard has just turned 80. With a look at his career, here's Christine.
Dave Pope recalls the time he organised a Christmas street party in the village and told them a special guest would be calling in later on. Because it was Christmas, everyone thought it would be Father Christmas, he says. It wasn't. And when the special guest turned out to be pop superstar Cliff Richard, the street erupted into a frenzy of excitement. Sir Cliff, as he is now, recently celebrated his 80th birthday and still has the looks and energy that many men in their 50s can only dream of. His 43rd studio album goes on sale at the end of the month, and Dave, a friend of the star since the 1970s, says the hardest thing for him will be that he can't share the milestone with his fans. He would have been on a UK concert tour this week had he not been forced to postpone it due to coronavirus. Dave, a gospel singer and charity worker from Lower Gornal, Dudley, first met Cliff at a Billy Graham event in Amsterdam in the mid-1970s. A few years later, the star invited Dave's band, the Alethians, to support him in a series of charity concerts. This partnership also introduced him to Alethians keyboard player Chris Eaton, who went on to pen many of Sir Cliff's popular hits, including Saviour's Day. Sir Cliff was born Harry Roger Webb in Lucknow, India, in 1940, the son of a catering manager working on the Indian Railways. When India was granted independence in 1948, the Webbs returned to the UK by boat, a journey which took 3 weeks, and in 1950 the family settled in a council house in Cheshunt, Hertfordshire. As a teenager, he became interested in skiffle music, and his father bought him his first guitar when he was 16. The following year, he formed the Quintones vocal group, and he sang in the Dick Teague skiffle group. But it was the rise of the American rock and roll star Elvis Presley that would give a clue to where his future lay. He became lead singer in a rock and roll group called The Drifters, no connection to the American band of the same name, and was persuaded to change his name to Cliff Richard. Cliff was chosen to represent the rock of rock and roll, and Richard a tribute to Little Richard. But the surname was also a cunning ploy to make sure people remembered him. I figured that people would introduce me as Cliff Richards, and I would then correct them and tell them it's Cliff Richard without the S. That way I would get two mentions, he later revealed. His 1958 debut, Move It, caused a sensation, and his chiselled features and distinctive black quiff led to him immediately being branded the English Elvis. Like many up-and-coming stars of the time, he made an appearance on Jack Good's popular youth television series, Oh Boy. It's wonderful to be going on TV for the first time, but I feel so nervous that I don't know what to do. I shaved my sideburns off last night. Jack Good said it would make me look more original, he said. In performance, he struck a pose of rock attitude, rarely smiling or looking at the audience or camera. His late 1958 and early 1959 follow-up singles, High Class Baby and Livin' Dull, were followed by Mean Streak. It was on Livin' Dull that the Drifters began to back Richard on record. It was his fifth record and became his first number one single. But as the success of Livin' Dull also created a legal headache, and as the song climbed the US charts, his backing group were forced to change its name to The Shadows to avoid confusion with the American group. The Shadows always remained contractually separate from Cliff and received no royalties for records backing him. In 1959, The Shadows, then still The Drifters, landed an EMI recording contract of its own and released three singles, two of which featured double-sided vocals and one of which had instrumental on both sides. In 1960, The Shadows topped the charts with Apache in several countries, setting them on a different path, although the band continued to collaborate with Cliff. He also starred in a number of musical films, including the hit musical Summer Holiday. After converting to Christianity, Sir Cliff continued his career, going on to sell more than 250 million records and surviving the arrival of the Beatles, disco and punk while still scoring hits. He was knighted in 1995, the first rock star to be honoured in such a way. But while his career has been a soaraway success, he has been unlucky in love. In his younger years, he was linked with numerous glamorous women and had a high-profile relationship with the tennis star Sue Barker, But although he said he was ready to settle down and have children when he marked his 40th birthday in 1980, he has remained the bachelor boy. Dave Pope says the secret to Sir Cliff's youthful demeanour is that he's managed to avoid the temptations that many people in show business succumb to, and always surrounding himself with a group of close friends. He's an amazing professional, he is fun, and has got a rapport with the crowds, says Dave, who at 72 is 8 years Sir Cliff's junior. He is very professional, he expects the best from the people he works with, and he always gives his best 110% of the time. And he still pulls the punters in. Thousands flocked to the tiny Shropshire village of Lidbury North in 2017 to see him perform at Walcott Hall. His 70th birthday, 10 years ago, came in the middle of a concert tour, where he jokingly appeared on the stage carrying a walking frame, and before the coronavirus, he planned to mark his 80th in a similar style. And 10 years from now? Will he be celebrating his 90th birthday with another album and an ambitious concert tour? You would be brave to bet against it.
Thanks, Christine. Now, my favourite Cliff Richard song has got to be We Don't Talk Anymore from 1979. What a great song that is. Anyway, enough of me. Yeah, with this week's flashback quiz, we're all waiting. Have you got the answers, Mina?
The answers are here, Simon. So, hands up if you got them all right. Hands up if you got them all wrong. Well, I got question three right. So let's run through the answers. Question one. How long did the gunfight at the OK Corral actually last? The answer here is just 30 seconds. In question two, we have, in what year did Walt Disney first promote Disneyland on TV? And that was in 1954. Question three. We all know about fingerprinting, but do identical twins have the same fingerprints? The answer, no, they don't. Fingerprints are unique to each person, including identical twins. Question four. What was unusual about German gymnast George Eisler? The answer, he had a wooden leg, but won 6 gold medals in a day in 1904. Question 5. In what year was Orson Welles' infamous radio broadcast, War of the Worlds, made? The answer is 1938. And finally, question 6. In 1974, Muhammad Ali knocked out George Foreman in a boxing match in Zaire. The fight has become known as what? The Rumble in the Jungle. I'm sure you got all of them right. We'll have another flashback quiz next week. Now, I hope Pete's ready with a music quiz.
I am, Mina, and we have a little music quiz to finish this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. So you know what we do? We take a song title and we miss a word out. I'll put the word what in, and all you've got to do is guess the name of the track. So let's start off from 1964 and Have I the What by the Honeycombs. So Have I the What, the Honeycombs from 1964. 1965, We Can What. Three what's there, look. We Can What. The Beatles. Okay, 1965. The Beatles. We Can What. And finally, from 1966, Elusive What. That's by Val Doonigan. Okay, 1966, Elusive What. Val Doonigan. The answers coming up at the start of next week's Black Country Talking News. But for now, it's over to you, Simon.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!